And away we go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, off and running midweek edition, Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Tom?
It's today. Either Jackie Gleason or the Kentucky Derby. I'm not sure which. Away we go.
Hey, we got the Derby coming up here. It's always that first weekend, the Run for the Roses, weekend in May. And I know that very well because my wedding anniversary, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, was a Derby day.
Well, early congratulations.
Well, thank you. Hey, Tom, today is National Administrative Assistance Day, the day we honor the men and women who get so much done. Without them, I wonder how much work would get done in America.
So am I an EA? Am I an A?
You
administrative assistant?
In a broad sense, perhaps. All right. Welcome. Again, we are off and running our 14th year with the Buckmaster Show. And also, I don't talk about it much, but we do have a presence on social media, very robust presence on Facebook and on X, formerly known as Twitter. We come to you from the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, which is part of the Bustos Media growing presence in Tucson. Five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030. KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk on the radio. We have our worldwide live listening and 13 full years of content easily archived for you. It's a very convenient way to look at some back shows and podcasts. Go to buckmastershow.com. We haven't changed the design of our website since we launched the program 13 years ago. Hey, if it ain't broke, why fix it? That's what I say. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line up to the original state capitol. It wasn't a state at the time. It was a territory, Prescott, Arizona, and Will Humble. Will is our contributor on public health. We couldn't ask for a better contributor in that area. He's director of marketing and public affairs and executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will spent more than 30 years. Well, he's actually spent almost 35 years now in public health, and he had a stint as agency director at the Arizona Department of Health Services from 2009 to 2015. Will, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. How you doing, Bill?
Doing well. As they say, hanging in there. We do need to note, down at the state capitol, in your particular case, up at the capitol, in our case, lawmakers who I guess only meet now once a week on Wednesdays, are tackling the whole 1864 Arizona territorial law on abortion, which was upheld by the Arizona Supreme Court 4-2. If this is repealed, Will Humble, we go back to the 2022 abortion law. Is that the deal?
That's correct. If that's what the legislature ends up doing, just repealing the territorial law, era law, that's the one from 1864, which prohibited basically all abortions unless the life of the mother was at risk, goes back to, as you mentioned, the 2022 law, which limits abortion to the first 15 weeks unless there's risk to the mother's life. And there, importantly, is no exceptions to that. For rape and incest. So, you know, that may be something that they deal with as an amendment to that law this week or next week. We'll see. I think we'll know more by the end of the day what's going on. I think the action today mostly is in the House rather than the Senate.
Yeah. I do want to talk about what's going on, the action in a Maricopa County Superior Court. We've been talking now for over a year, Will, about Governor Hobbs has sent over to the lawmakers several appointments for agency directors. They've been held up. This now has gone to court. What's the latest on that, Will?
Yeah, so as you remember, and as you just described, Governor Hobbs put forth her nominees for many of the state agencies And the Senate created this new committee called the Director on Executive Nominations, and they have been either really slow or just not acting at all on those nominees. And in Dr. Cullen's case, turned her down. And out of frustration, I think, the governor said, okay, this is not a fair process, and I'm not getting the Senate isn't doing its diligence according to what statutorily the responsibilities are. So she withdrew those nominations and put a single person in charge of all a whole bunch of agencies, a guy named Ben Henderson, and then moved those agency directors to called, executive deputies or things like that. Senate President Peterson doesn't like what the governor did, so the Senate President Peterson sued Governor Hobbs in Maricopa County Superior Court. That hearing is Friday. The oral arguments are Friday at 10 o'clock. They interestingly set more oral arguments for a month from now. So I'm guessing that the Superior Court judge isn't going to have a decision until sometime this summer, which, of course, I expect whoever loses to appeal. So in the meantime, these executive, directors are in place and making decisions, arguably in violation of the statute. But, the dispute is whether the Senate's being fair to the executive or not. So we'll see, what the arguments are. I hope to be able to listen online Friday at 10.
Who's running the Department of Health here in Arizona then right now?
So right now it's a person named Jennifer Cunico. I don't know that much about her. When I was the director of the agency, she worked, she had a pretty limited job there. I didn't interact with her much, so I don't really know her very well. She certainly doesn't have the level of public health expertise that Director Cullen had. Beyond that, I can't say much more.
Well, I want to talk about the governor has now sent kind of a broad outline on the budget. And we were talking to our friends at the Grand Canyon Institute. I know you're very well aware of what they do, a Phoenix think tank, nonpartisan, nonprofit. And we were talking to Dr. Dave Wells, the research director, about this budget situation. And he's talking about all the red ink that lawmakers are facing due to the tax changes in the tax codes, and the governor's talking about now a hiring freeze. What does that mean to like a department like the Arizona Department of Health Services?
Yeah, so you're right. So this came out on a Friday afternoon last week where the governor had sent letters to the state agency directors telling them to come up with a 4% budget reduction for the remaining part of this fiscal year and a plan for reducing their budget by 2% next year. And importantly, as you just mentioned, told those agency directors to implement a hiring freeze where the directors can fill, they just basically hiring freeze. I mean, everyone knows what that means. Mm-hmm. So I ran that agency for a long time. I worked there for a long, long time. There are parts of the a state agency like that that can deal with a hiring freeze, without, really harming some of the important public health programming. But there are other parts of the agency that have really critical responsibilities that a hiring freeze could be actually really bad for the people of Arizona. The two areas that I hope that are not subject to the freeze are in the public health licensing arena. So those are the inspectors that go out to assisted living and skilled nursing facilities, behavioral health facilities, and are supposed to make sure that those licensed facilities are providing the right kind of services, that patients are being treated properly with dignity and not being mistreated. And basically they're the regulatory authority for that really important care network. As we've talked about on the show for the last year, the shortcomings that the state health department has had in terms of not regulating those facilities well and letting them get away with abuse and neglect, honestly, they're beginning to turn the tables, but by recruiting some talented staff and trying to retain them and getting some good training in place. But a hiring freeze would be actually pretty devastating to the progress that has been made in that area. Another area that I think would be really bad to have a hiring freeze is at the Arizona State Hospital. That's our care facility for folks that need the most stringent and restrictive level of care. Restrictive may not be the right word, but the most intensive level of care. And there's a lot of turnover in that group. And so it would be really bad to have lacking staff at the Arizona State Hospital. I've been trying to clarify whether the freeze, you know, applies to the licensing mission and the hospital, and I haven't had any answers yet.
All right, Will, stick around. I know you do have an engagement at 12:30, but we've got another segment with you. You are up in Prescott. What are you talking about, rural health, this afternoon?
No, this group wanted to hear about the action over at the state legislature so far this year, so the different bills. And there's been some good ones, by the way, around improving care for people with mental health, court-ordered evaluation, court-ordered treatment. So I'm going to summarize the good things and the bad things and the missed opportunities. So,
well, I'm going to keep it here for another minute. Can you kind of give us could you do the summary for me in a minute or two? What have been the good ones that have, and have they been signed into law, any of them?
Yeah, so there's a few good things.
Go ahead.
The tamale bill got signed, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Remember that from the drama last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's been a few bills have been really bipartisan to improve the process of providing care for people with a serious mental illness. So that's things like schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, people who need what's called court-ordered treatment. So people who really do need treatment for their psychiatric illness, but that don't think that they need help. You got to petition to court to get them into treatment. And some bills this year were really, I think, good and things that I were fighting for that improve the process so that family members and guardians can have a better opportunity to engage and improve the process for folks that need that kind of intensive care.
How about some of the ones that didn't, some of the stuff that didn't move forward that you wish had?
Well, there was a bunch of them. The thing I worked probably the hardest on was an effort to try to separate the Arizona State Hospital from the state health department. The big conflict of interest there, which has been jeopardizing care, in my opinion, is that the Arizona State Health Department is both responsible for running the Arizona State Hospital, that's our psychiatric hospital facility, and also for regulating the facility. And everybody, I mean, it's pretty intuitive that you shouldn't be running the same place that you're regulating. That is not a good check and balance system.
No.
That is what we have. We had an opportunity from Senator Gallin to fix that this year. Sadly, for the third year in a row, went down in flames.
All right, we've got more to talk about with Will Humble. Will, stick around. We'll take a break. It's Buckmaster on a midweek edition, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. We love Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. We had a great lunch up there on Sunday. Saw a bunch of friends actually at Mona's. And if we had chosen, we could have had a bottle of beer or some other type of drink because they do now have the liquor license. And if it's an added enhancement if you're so inclined. monasdanishbakery.com, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Be right back with Will Humble. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure,
My air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. Will Humble is with us. We bring in Will once a month. Will is one of two dozen or so contributors. So glad we have him. He is our contributor on public health. He's the former director of the Arizona Department of Health. He's up in Prescott and has a presentation at 12:30. So we'll finish out this segment and Will will go to work. Talking about the legislature and public health-related items. Speaking of public health, one wouldn't think that the Arizona Corporation Commission, which most people will humble have no idea how important it is, and public health have anything in common, but they do, don't they, Will?
They sure do. The Arizona a lot of what the Arizona Corporation Commission does is ministerial. They register nonprofit organizations and businesses, and you know, limited liability corporations. Bill, you're probably registered over at the commission.
I am.
You know,
yeah,
and right. So
yeah.
So a lot of what they do is ministerial, but they also have a really important job, which is they're supposed to examine the rate increases that these monopoly utilities are asking for. Down there, it's the Tucson Electric Power. Statewide, it's Arizona Public Service, or APS. Southwest Gas is another monopoly. And so when those entities want to ask ratepayers to pay more, the Corporation Commission is supposed to examine that request and look to see and ensure that it's reasonable and that it's actually necessary for them to maintain good service, because everybody wants to make sure that when they turn the switch that the electricity comes on. You know,
yeah.
Everyone wants to have a reliable utility, but also everybody expects that they're going to be paying reasonable rates. And the interface between public, I did a blog on this week, the interface between the Corporation Commission and public health is pretty simple. That, you know, for low-income families that are just trying to make ends meet, you know, a 14% increase in electricity costs, which is what APS has gotten over the last couple of years, can have a big impact on their family budget, and that affects their ability to use the limited funds that they have in their family budget for, you know, things like healthier foods, to buy things that their kids need, to improve their transportation options so that they can maybe get a promotion at a different kind of a job that's further away from where they live, so that they can pay their rent. So the more pressure there is on a family budget, the more stress there is on that family, and it has a negative impact on that family's health status. And what, in my opinion, we've seen over the last few years, especially the last 3 years from the Corporation Commission, is that basically, you know, these utility, it's hard to see that they're doing any kind of scrutiny of these rate increase requests that these utilities are putting in, because they basically approve everything. And I mentioned APS got a 14% rate increase over the last 2 years, between the 8% from 2022. And then they just a month ago or 2 months ago approved another rate increase. You know, this has an impact on families. And I just hope that people, when they go into, and I'm not talking about any individual candidate, but I'm just urging voters to pay attention to the Corporation Commission race and do your homework before you go and mark your ballot this fall. There's 3 open seats out of 5 on this Corporation Commission. And whatever decision you make, just make sure it's an informed one, and that you're selecting candidates that feel like they have your back rather than the back of, you know, the CEOs of these monopoly utilities and their well-paid lobbyists with fancy shoes. I mean, this has a real impact on your life. Now, if you're well-to-do and your utility bill goes on your 5-bedroom house from $600 to $660 in July, it's going to piss you off, you know? But it's not going to impact your family's health.
No.
But if you're a low-income person, even a 10% increase in the utility costs on a summer bill can make the difference between whether you can afford medication or, you know, healthy foods for your family.
Yeah, and you know, Southwest Gas here had a pass-through. Bills went up considerably. They're now coming down a little bit, but there's some automatic pass-through. I don't really understand how it works, but these are things that we really need a better education on what this is all about from the Arizona Corporation Commission.
Yeah, I mean, my main take-home message here is pay attention to those 3 races in the CorpCom.
Yes.
Don't wait until, you know, election day and to go, what's this? Or, you know, do your homework, because these people have a real impact on your family budget.
Yeah.
They do.
I know.
They do. And whether they listen, and I have seen a pattern, in my opinion, of them just approving rate increases, and not only rate increases, they also last month allowed APS to increase their guaranteed return on equity up into the 9.4% range. So that means that might sound wonky, but what that does is set a precedent so that it's easier for APS to get another rate increase if they put that in next year, because they can increase their return on equity. Now, I mean, they need to be able to have the ability to run new power lines and maintain the infrastructure and be able to provide service to new communities, but they shouldn't be getting so much money that they're able to pay their executives and their shareholders super high returns on the backs of ratepayers. That's my opinion. Everyone's going to have a different one, but don't let this race slip past you this fall. Pay attention to it and do some research.
All right. Well, I've only got 2 minutes with you. What about vaccines for kids? Have there been some changes announced at the Arizona Department of Health?
Yeah. So what's been happening over the last few years is so many doctors have been quitting the vaccine business because the state health department runs what's called the Vaccines for Children program. It's a federally funded program to make sure that every kid has the ability to get vaccinated. But they've been over-regulating these doctors' practices to the extent that we've lost nearly 50% of the doctors that were actually providing vaccines through this Vaccines for Children program. These are kids that get vaccines through Medicaid, and maybe they'll be uninsured or underinsured. And, you know, the network of doctors has been, and me and other public health people have been urging the state health department to take it easy and stop regulating these doctors so that they quit.
Yeah.
I think they finally got the message, and they made some, which we don't have time to talk about. They've made some promises that they're going to start doing things differently when it comes to regulating these doctors' practices. We haven't seen anything concrete yet, but they at least have made some promises that they are going to be more reasonable with their regulation of doctors' practices through things like inventory control and that kind of thing. I've got a couple blogs if people want to listen or read more detail about it, but that's pretty much what we have time for today.
All right. At the Arizona Public Health Association, that's where we can find your blog. Boy, so many doctors have just said, I've had enough and have retired. It's just, it really is amazing. Will, we got to let you go, and you've got work to do there up in Prescott. Thank you, sir.
All right. Talk to you next month.
All right. Will Humble, he is the former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. Midway point of the Buckmaster Show. We're going to talk about agave after we take the mid-show break on Buckmaster.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midweek edition. This portion presented by, well, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Talk a little bit about Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Boy, it seems like everybody I know goes over to Green Things, which is a very good thing to get all of their spring plants and get things rolling as we transition into the, let's just put it, this way, very warm weather. I won't say hot yet. The 13-acre site is home to Zocalo. They've got that great merchandise from imported Mexican pottery, some wonderful items, handcrafted furniture, greenthingsaz.com, and zocalovillage.com. Green Things is open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Tucson just had an agave heritage festival. I thought we would bring in my friend, Dr. Bill Doley, President Emeritus and Senior Advisor of Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit based here in Tucson, to talk a little bit about agave, something that he knows quite a bit about and is trying to even learn more. Agave is a food tradition that's been around a long time. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Doing great, Bill. Good to be back.
Well, a food tradition that might surprise some people, older than maize or corn.
Yep. Well, it was documented down in Mexico as at least 9,000 years ago.
Whoa.
Little quids, they're called, the fiber that's left from chewing a fairly fibrous leaf in a cave site down there. So, yes, 9,000 or more.
So a lot of the focus for the Agave Heritage Festival, which takes place every year in April, has been on alcoholic beverages, but there's a lot more to agave than the spirits.
Yes, I've got nothing against the alcohol part, but the food part is really what interests me.
So how long have archaeologists actually been studying agave?
Well, I think in the 1970s, people started to see this landscape out there in throughout southern Arizona of rock piles and then linear rock terraces, but they're in places that are away from good irrigated land. And they started thinking, well, it's probably for an agricultural field of some sort. But what would people have been growing there? It's dry. It's too far away for the irrigation water to get there. And so we scratched our heads and said, we don't know what they're growing there.
So what was the conclusion then was...
How did we solve that problem?
Yeah, how did you solve that problem? I mean, how is something growing with let's say, limited irrigation or limited water?
So it was partly new methods, new work, and archaeologists take samples of soil when they're doing an excavation, and that soil has charred material in it, and you throw that in water, and it floats to the top. And people started identifying, oh, this fiber looks like it's coming from an agave plant, and the little thorns that are on the leaves were recognized. So, and we started to find, the roasting pits to process agave are out in those field systems. So slowly we started realizing that, and then we started seeing it all over the place.
So they would have these roasting pits, they would take the agave and then they would roast the material?
Yeah, agave's A, doesn't need a lot of water, and B, it has both food and fiber that it's got to give back to its human partners. So the leaves are just very fibrous, and so they can be processed into things like twine and sandals and that sort of thing. And the hearts, after you've lopped those leaves off, you can roast that literally for 24 hours, sometimes even longer, in a deep pit-baked kind of oven outdoors, and it comes out soft and sweet. So it's sweet potato is probably the closest easy analogy.
So how do you've obviously tasted it, and it's okay or pretty? You said sweet, so
we actually got to taste it on last Saturday, down at the Mission Garden. The Hualapai tribe from northern Arizona came down with some of their agave from the northern part of the state. And so I got to try actually a new kind of agave last time. Mm. And it was, I didn't think it was as good as the one that is grown down here. It's called Agave Murphyi, but it was good. I liked it.
So it sounds like it's kind of a perfect package, right? So many different uses for the plant.
Exactly. And the fact that it doesn't intrude on the space that you want your corn and beans and irrigated crops to grow, and it can grow kind of farther up the slope towards the base of the mountains. And it's a good package.
So what time frame are we talking about? When did this all happen?
Well, it has probably been happening for a very long time, but we started to see it in, I'll refer to them almost as plantations, these extensive field systems, probably in the late 800s into the 900s and extending into at least as long as the 1300s. So it really seems to be very common across southern Arizona. So the Huagam, the ancestors of today's Autumn people, who Tona Autumn, you know, just down the road from us here in Tucson, were making a big deal out of agave in that kind of time frame.
Was there a kind of a social or ceremonial role with agave as well?
You know, because there were lots of plants growing in these fields.
Everybody getting together and have a drink or something?
I don't know. Well, at the food level, they easily could have gathered a lot of food and roasted it and then had a big feast, basically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We think they were probably also making a fermented beverage. Tequila and mezcal and bacanora, those agave products that were talked about a lot at the Agave Heritage Festival, those are distilled, but you can something with sugar in it can be fermented and create a beverage.
So you said in your particular field there are a lot of, well, maybe not a lot, but there are archaeologists who are specializing in this.
We have some kind of agave heroes here in Tucson. Mm-hmm. A couple named Paul and Suzanne Fish. They worked for basically their most of their career at the Arizona State Museum, but they had the insight early on before Tucson burgeoned out of its smaller beginnings and did an extensive archaeological survey up in the northern part, Oro Valley, Marana, all the way out to Picacho area, peak area, and found literally thousands of acres of these field systems. And they documented the big roasting pits out in the field systems. So they're the ones that really kind of put it on everybody's awareness. Mm-hmm. And I mean, fortunately, at Archaeology Southwest, we've had a run at it too. Just on the, Paul and Susie worked on the north end of Tucson. We worked down just south of the San Javier District and found an extensive area down there as well. These gigantic roasting pits, like 30 feet across, 40 feet across. Mm. And also out in the San Pedro Valley, just through Reddington Pass at the east end of the Tucson Basin. Very impressive, extensive fields out there. So it's
it makes me wonder, you know, this was something that in the late 70s that the archaeologists started to kind of recognize the scale. I'm kind of wondering, like, why didn't others see these huge areas and maybe put it all together? Why did it take so long?
Well, I think part of it was because archaeologists tend to focus on the village sites. Like, there were villages that had ball courts, or then later in time, these platform mounds that were big architectural things that you could see on the surface. So part of it was just where people were looking. And as they got interested in, trying to understand not just individual villages, but the whole landscape, they started looking at things that are farther out. And they said, wow, these things are much more extensive than we ever realized.
When we come back with Bill Doley, we will explore a new realization about agave. There are some very interesting uses that are being explored. Bill Doley, the President Emeritus and Senior Advisor of Archaeology Southwest, which is based right here in Tucson, a very, very robust nonprofit organization. Proud to say I'm a member of the organization, and a lot of people are as well, and Bill and the team do some great work. We'll be right back with Bill Doley.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Great weekend to get away over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive. We send so many of our listeners over to that beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Three-hour drive, approximately. Lots to do. The Gila National Wilderness up to the Cliff Dwellings National Monument. That's always fun. That's about, 40-minute drive. North of Silver City, a very pretty drive, so there's a lot to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org for more information about your upcoming visit. And Bill Doley is with us from Archaeology Southwest, and Bill's Silver City, I think you've been doing like a field school over there, haven't you?
We have. We've been working out in areas just north of Silver City. But this year, we will be based right there in Silver City, working at the Museum of Western New Mexico University. And training students not how to dig up archaeological sites, but how to catalog the archaeological collections that come out of them. So I'm a fan of Silver City.
I don't blame you. And it'd be a perfect climate in this. It is a perfect climate in the summer with a 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation. It's going to be cooler. And we say that we usually kind of give the Buckmaster Show guarantee, Bill. It's about 10 degrees cooler
at least, than Tucson. And you mentioned the museum there at Western New Mexico University. They have some of the finest, maybe it is the finest collection of Mimbres pottery in the world there. A nice little museum there. Bill Doley is with us. Dr. Doley, President Emeritus and Senior Advisor of Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit organization based here in Tucson. We've been talking about agave, and really that archaeologists have been working with a wide variety of species, surprisingly a lot of different species of agave, Bill.
Well, it's our partnership with the botanists who have that larger view of they can actually tell us what kind of species are out there on the landscape and that sort of thing. We see, it's hard for us with the archaeological evidence, for example, to identify this species or that. Mm-hmm. But when they look around on the modern landscape, they're finding that there's at least four species of agave here in from northern to southern Arizona that they think are not just wild, but they are domesticates by working, the impact of humans on the life cycle of the agave has led to their domestication. So,
and you were saying in our first segment with you that there have been just several documented, several hundred of these agave fields covering several thousand acres.
Yes. No, they're the abundance of them, the fact that they're important, at least during a 300, 400, or 500 year time period here, late in the Huagam archaeological sequence that we study here in southern Arizona, is really been a big realization.
And there was a new agave species that really is quite rare, isn't it?
Well, there's one. Our work out on the San Pedro started way back in 1990. And we had 5 years where we were walking up and down the valley identifying sites. And we probably identified over 200 of these agave fields, several thousand acres of them. And in some of those fields, we actually saw agaves. And we thought that's pretty cool. But the botanists that we work with up at the Desert Botanical Garden saw one of those photographs, and they basically got in touch with us. We went out there and started looking at all those sites that had agaves, and they said, this is different than the other species that we're seeing. And they made the case that agave out on the San Pedro is its own domesticated species, and they've named it Agave San Pedroensis.
Well, that's wonderful news, because you wouldn't have had that if you and your team hadn't been out there. So that's exciting, a new
species.
It also species.
Illustrates how archaeological information accumulates. We went back and looked at our notes from, literally 2 decades earlier, and led us back out to revisit the same places.
So can that be protected?
Well, it's extremely rare, and it's not able to be protected under the Endangered Species Act because it's a domesticate, and this is a conundrum. The Endangered Species Act does not apply to it. It's been tried and rejected in a previous one of these domesticated species. So we're not giving up, but it's... it's going to be a challenge to, we think there may be, we know there's at least about 50 of these that are being, quote, cared for out on the San Pedro or up at the Desert Botanical Garden. But what we're doing is monitoring them out in the wild. We went out there 2 Saturdays ago to the place that they had originally been described and identified as a separate species. All of those agaves were dead. The drought had literally taken them out.
Oh.
So it's a real threat to try to protect these.
Wonder how they'll cook up and taste.
Well,
if you can find one that's still alive that survived the drought.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that we'd like to know. I mean, what is it that humans are doing when they're selecting for what kind of traits in these agaves that are the domesticates? Is it they're sweeter, they grow faster, they're maybe they mature at a convenient time of the year when there's not agricultural activities, or it's in the wintertime or early spring when food supplies are, but we don't have enough of these to be able to do experiments on them. So we're trying to up the number out there to help.
And you wonder why they were even domesticated, Bill Doley, in the first place.
Yeah, and to it's not like we can sacrifice many of these to experiment on them.
Until that's so rare.
The numbers get bumped up.
Anything else you'd like to kind of share with us about agave before we say goodbye?
Well, I think the point that we think about corn and beans and those things were being domesticated down in Mexico, but these are examples of domestication happening right here in probably the neighborhoods where we see these plants today. So domestication as a important cultural process happening where we are and where these plants are. And I think also these agaves, because they're drought tolerant and heat tolerant to some extent, have a potential for future agriculture. We're all suffering the impacts already of climate change, and this is, I think, one of the reasons that people, besides the alcoholic drinks, have an interest in finding out more about them.
And, of course, Tucson is that United Nations city of gastronomy. All this fits in nicely, kind of dovetails with that, doesn't it?
Long tail.
All these kind of unique food products.
Yep. Long-term food traditions that make a place special and tie it to its local setting are very much in line with that Tucson City of Gastronomy concept.
Talk a little bit before we go, give you a minute or so to talk about Archaeology Southwest. What is it? Why was it established? When was it established?
Well, I was the founder back in 1989. And I've just stepped down as that leadership role. We have a Dr. Stephen Nash came down from the Denver Museum of Nature and Science and has taken over. We do preservation archaeology. We're focused on sharing information, having low impact research methods, and working collaboratively with our local tribal partners. Mm-hmm. So, www.archaeologysouthwest.org is a way to sign up for a weekly news blast on all the things that are happening in Southwest and larger region archaeology. And it's been my career, and I'm pleased to be continuing on in kind of limited ways.
Glad you are.
Not having to.
Glad you're still around doing this.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Bill Doley. From Archaeology Southwest. It's going to do it for our show, our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Before we say goodbye, I want to say thank you to Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program, and of course, Dr. Bill Doley for coming in today and giving us so much information about agave. That's why I do the program every day, to try to learn something every day. And I think that's why a lot of people listen to this program, to hopefully learn something and enrich their lives. Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well. Back with you in about 23 hours.